Hold. Hold. H-O-L-D. Hold. Important word. Interesting word, but important word. Important word. In the Declaration of Independence, that oh so familiar phrase, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. We hold these truths. Is that hold meant to be hold as in to grasp, carry, or support these truths? Or is it hold as in to adhere to honor these truths? But it couldn't be that, could it? For to honor these truths, the truths that all men are created equal, to honor those truths would not have allowed for the inequity or the inequality written into the Constitution, three-fifths of a man and the like. Or is it hold as in to constrain, restrict, control? We control, we constrain these truths. We control these truths to be self-evident, dot, dot, dot. Seems to be more fitting, I think. Because here's the thing. A controlled truth doesn't need to be accurate or honest. A controlled truth doesn't even need to be true. But it can, nonetheless, become reality.
The Publix Radio presents Season 2 of the award-winning audio play, God Talks to an Agnostic, created and produced by the Wilbury Theater Group in collaboration with AFRI Productions, with support from Brown Arts Institute. God Talks to an Agnostic is a 12-part audio play written and directed by Don Mays.
Have you ever been in a place that is totally different than any place you've ever been? I mean, totally different, completely foreign to you, unlike any place you've ever been or are used to. And then something happens, a small, subtle thing maybe, something unexpected, and all of a sudden, everything becomes vividly familiar. You're like, I know this place, this feeling. Our first night in the rainforest village, the only night it didn't rain, we all sat in front of the village elder's hut and listened to his stories. It wasn't like in the movies. You know, in the movies, they have the wise old sage sitting on a throne-like chair adorned with animal skulls and pelts. The chair, not the elder. You know the movies I'm talking about. They'd have him propped up in his throne above all the villagers. You know, with all eyes focused on him, with reverence, they'd all listen. Wasn't like that. Here, I mean, well, there was the reverence. I mean, there was still the respect, but he, the elder, sat on the ground on the same large plant leaves that we all sat on. And as he spoke, we all listened, but they also laughed and interjected and adding to the tales or possibly correcting him. But I was still feeling I was in a very different, unfamiliar place. And then this little boy, must have been like 2 years old, he walked up to the elder very unceremoniously, like any kid would his grandfather, crawled in his lap and made himself comfortable, just chilled there. And in that instant, everything became so familiar. It took me back to the porch on Rose Avenue. I only knew one of my grandparents, my father's father. My earliest memories, some of my earliest memories, are of times I spent with my grandfather, Gopi. Gopi, that's Charlie's 3-year-old interpretation of grandpa. It just kind of stuck. There was this old metal chair, faded ash green, worn down to the metal on the arms. The frame was one of those kind of incomplete S-shaped metal tube-looking situations. This allowed for a kind of tenuous rocking by the occupant.
That occupant was always Gopi. That was Gopi's chair. There was a worn wicker chair with a ratty old cushion, a wooden bench. Maybe someone would bring out metal chairs from the basement, none of which sat evenly. There was always a cap missing from one of the legs, or the leg was bent, so the chair didn't sit evenly. With the one leg shorter than the others, the chair would awkwardly rock to one side whenever you moved or adjusted your position. Or people would just sit on the floor of the porch, leaning against the supports of the awning. But the green metal chair was Gopi's chair. And my seat was in Gopi's lap. I would always crawl into Gopi's lap. Addie was always too busy running around, being nosy, bouncing from person to person, trying to be in everybody's business. I'd just sit there, lean back, my back against Gopi's chest. I'd reach one arm up over my head to place around the back of his neck, a kind of reverse hug, or I'd hold onto his ear. The other hand, I'd hold onto his thick fingers or thumb. He'd tell his stories. Even before I understood what he was saying, I could feel the resonance in his voice, the up and down of his breathing. My whole body would gently bounce when he laughed. One of my first memories, he talked about going to the South.
My first encounter with Jim Crow, it wasn't an overt racist calling me names in my face thing.
He was 18, going off to college.
I think I would have been ready for that.
He went to a historically black college, an HBCU.
My folks warned me about that. They told me down South, they call you out your name, like boy or worse. You know what I'm talking about.
We did. We all did.
Say it like it was your name. They warned me about that. Said, don't let it set me off. Just ignore it. That's just how it was down there, they'd say. So I was kind of prepared for that. But what I was met with, I was not prepared for at all.
Gopi enjoyed telling this story.
I don't even know how to describe it.
I'd heard it many times.
It was...
We all knew this story, almost verbatim. He'd start...
It was a feeling. It was just a feeling. It was ironic. It wasn't mean or nasty like you'd expect. My first impression when I first got there, it was genteel, polite, southern, all smiles and nods, even though you knew underneath there was that you better know your place kind of thing. Overall, feeling was kind of easygoing, niceness. I mean, you know, eventually I did encounter those asshole crackers.
My first swear words.
Down South, you're definitely going to run into...
From his tongue to mine.
Bunch of asshole crackers.
That was Gopi's go-to swear for all racial infractions.
I mean, they're here too, but down there, there was always a bunch of asshole crackers just lurking.
Gopi was always saying it. Watching the news.
Look at the bunch of asshole crackers.
Reading the paper.
Did you see this? Bunch of asshole crackers.
Whatever racist or privileged thing white people did that annoyed him, his go-to was...
Bunch of asshole crackers.
But I digress. Gopi had many stories, but he especially loved telling this one.
It was the second day after I arrived on campus. My roommate, Nate, was from the South. We decided to go into town. We had to ride the bus. Nate and I got on the bus. The bus driver was pleasant, smiled as we got on. The bus was pretty empty, but Nate led me to the back. I didn't really think anything of it. The first few stops, a handful of black folks got on. Then we pulled up to a stop and there were white people waiting to get on. The bus driver stops the bus, puts it in park, gets up and walks about a third of the way back. I hadn't even noticed there was a placard, a sign said colored, attached to the back of one of the seats. It was movable. The driver took the sign and moved it back several seats. Two black people got up and moved back to the seats behind the sign. Then he let the white people on. He did this two more times till all the black people were crowded in the back four rows, squeezed together. A lot of people had to stand. Me and Nate, we gave our seats to two ladies. I said to Nate, what the hell?
Be cool, man. Just be cool. That's just how it is down here.
There's a bunch of empty seats up.
That don't concern us.
There were vacant seats in front of the sign, but we were all cramped in the very back of that bus. People with kids standing. I mean, everybody let the old people sit. as many as we could. I looked at Nate. Nate was like,
"It's nothing, don't sweat it."
I hated riding the bus. I still do. I was mad. I was like, "We walking back to campus. I ain't getting on the damn bus, hell no."
It's too far to walk to get there before dark. And let me tell you, it's far worse walking in the dark in the wrong places, so.
It was getting late when we got on that bus to head back to campus. The bus was crowded, white folks in front. We headed to the back. By the time we got to our stop, all the white folks had gotten off. Still quite a few of us on the bus. The driver hadn't moved the sign. He wasn't paying attention to us. So when our stop came, we got to our stop, I hadn't thought about it or nothing, but I was still mad. As we got off the bus, I grabbed that sign, snuck and hid it underneath my jacket, and walked off with it. As the bus drove off, I could see people looking out the window. I held up the sign, and they all nodded and smiled. This one old dude, he pursed his lips, pumped his fist like, "Yeah!" After that, every time I rode one of those buses, when I got off, when I could, I'd sneak and steal that sign. I must have took about 50 of them signs. Me and Nate, we'd find places to put them, like on benches in one of them parks for whites only. We snuck into a white church and put one in the pulpit. White folks were so confused. And one time, we put one sign on a drinking fountain, side by side. Two drinking fountains said, "Colored." White folks wouldn't drink from neither fountain.
Gopi loved telling that story. We loved hearing it. I'm sure the number of stolen signs were more like 5, not 50. But the grander the story, the more grandiose, the more we laughed. And there we were, Robin and I, deep in the rainforest, sitting on those giant leaves on the ground, listening, surrounded by people I'd never before seen or even knew existed, speaking a language I'd never heard, not understanding a single word. But when that little boy, a toddler, left his mother's side, she didn't attempt to stop him, she barely noticed. When he sleepily walked across, made his way through the seated gathering to the elder, crawled into his lap, as I'm sure he had done many, many times before, just as I had with my Gopi, crawled into his lap and made himself comfortable, the elder didn't break or adjust his speech. In that instant, everything became familiar, so familiar. I suddenly knew this place, felt like I had been here before. I didn't understand the words, but I knew the story, or the telling of the story. As the elders wrapped up and everyone began to make their way back to their dwellings, I felt Baxter's hand gently caress my lower back. I turned to her. She was lying on her back. "You okay?"
"Yeah, I'm good."
She nodded, indicating for me to look up. I laid down beside her.
"Look at that. So many stars."
"Yeah."
"It's beautiful."
"Mm-hmm." And just as she says,
"I wonder which one is Mace." "Oh my God."
A shooting star streaks across the sky.
"Did you? Oh my God. Did you see that? You see it?"
Yeah, I did. That's wild."
"That's him. That's him. That's..."
A tear wells in her eye, still lying on her back. It spills out of the corner of her eye and rolls down to her ear.
"Can't believe it's almost been a year."
"I know." "What?"
"You."
"What? Me what?"
"I used to think, back in the beginning when we first met, I used to think you were so cold, passionless, lacked empathy."
"Yes, you've told me."
"I was wrong."
"It doesn't matter."
"No, it does. That's why I'm here, we're here. You have compassion, empathy, but it's... maybe that's your agnostic thing. Compassion without the crap."
"What are you... where's this coming from?"
I said, "I can't believe it's been a year and you..." "No words of compassion, no. You didn't try to give me some crap fix. You just...
What? Hey. I'm sorry. What? What did I do? What?
You just... Your ass just brought me to the middle of the goddamn jungle so I could see Mason in the stars. No words could ever do that. I love you.
I love you back. We lay there in silence for a while. The sounds of the rainforest consumed the air. For me, at least. I looked over at Baxter. I could see she was in her head, her meditative thing. I just looked at her. I love looking at her when she's... It's like I'm not even there. So beautiful. I can't wait till she gets it.
Lying here under the stars, so many stars. The light pollution in the city robs us of this. The constellations are upside down here. I know the constellations, I know them. Orion, Andromeda, Ursa Major, Ursa Minor. But I don't accept those. Kinda audacious to think that they can name the stars. All those stars. Look at this, look at how vast. Agnostic, it's times like now, like this that I can see is, I mean, I look up and I see power and beauty and see this vast, amazing universe. And I think this is God. God created this. And at the same time, I see how he can say, this is so vast. How could it have been created by some God, some heavenly being? Of course, that was before. Now he talks to God, or God talks to him. God talks to an agnostic. That's so crazy. I know this stuff with his family, like, especially Little Miss Church Lady. I know she be tripping. I don't know how twins can be so opposite, total opposites. Well, they say they're two halves of a whole. Girlfriend could not stand me at first. For a long time, actually. When we finally did talk.
Hey, baby brother, where you at? You out here?
It's just me.
Oh, hi, Robin.
Hi, Addie. He's not here, he'll be back soon.
Okay, thanks. Mind if I sit with you?
No.
Thanks. So, how are you? How are you doing?
You were about to turn around and go back inside, weren't you?
Oh, what? Oh, I
It's cool. You can wait for him inside. He'll be back soon, or if you want, I can tell him you stopped by.
But I didn't.
What?
I didn't go back inside. I came out. I came out to sit with you.
Yes, and...
I asked, how are you? I decided to come out because I wanted to check in with you.
Check? Why? You don't even like me.
That's not true.
That is true.
No, Robin, it's not.
You don't say it to my face, but I know you'd be dogging me out to your brother.
No, that's not what I don't.
I don't. What? What?
Let's not do this.
Let's not do what? Isn't it already done?
Okay. If it's done, then what's done is done. How about we start fresh? Start a new chapter.
Or maybe we just close the book. You do you and I'll do me.
That's not gonna work.
It's worked just fine up until now.
Has it? Has it really?
It's been good enough.
Well, good enough ain't good enough.
Well, good enough is all we got.
Look, I'm not trying to fight you.
Is, but I'm
I know
fine.
I've had
going
my part
my
in this, but you have
and
too.
And not being bothered by the crap.
You haven't exactly
I
been Miss Congeniality. You got your crap, too.
And
none
I
of
you don't need
you.
It now.
We hardly ever see you.
Because I know you don't like me. Why would I want to be around people who don't like me? No, not people, person. You.
I don't dislike you. I don't.
I could have fooled the hell out of me.
Well, it's not you. I don't dislike you. Not you specifically.
Sure, the hell feels like me specifically.
Well, it's not. It's how you... No, it's him. It's how you make him...
He's a grown man. I don't make him do anything.
That's not what I mean.
Then what the hell do you mean? Because that's what you said.
I know what I said.
Then what? What?
Stop!
Wait, what the hell are
Stop!
You...
Stop! Just listen, God damn it! Listen! Just listen. It's not you. I know it's not you. It is him. Him. The way he acts with... No. The way he is with you. Before, I used to think you were using him.
Using him?
Let me finish, please.
Whatever. Go ahead.
Because we never saw you. I never saw you. I didn't know what was... I didn't know the whole story. I thought it was... a one-way street. You'd call, text, whatever, and he'd come running. He'd drop everything and go running.
First of all, that's not the case. And second of all, it's none of your damn business.
Look, I'm trying to say I was wrong, God damn it. Ease the hell up, would you? Damn, ease up. I couldn't see the whole picture, so I guess I filled in the blanks.
I see. But why would you think...
Because he's my brother. He's my twin brother. I didn't want to see him get hurt. I know he loves you. In love with you. Always has been.
I love him too. We are in love. In love with each other.
Yes, I know. And that's...
Oh, I see. You think you're losing him. You're not losing him. You know that, right?
A part of him, I think. Feels like I'm losing at least a part.
No, not even. That twin thing y'all got going, it ain't going nowhere.
But it's okay if it is. I realize what you give him, what you mean to him is something that only you can give him. Only you.
That's what I've come to accept about you and him. Trust and believe you are never far from his mind.
And that's why good enough is not good enough.
We sat there and talked for hours, Addie and I, and we've been cool ever since. She told me before we left, Addie told me she was glad I was coming to the rainforest.
With what you both are going through? That crazy car accident and Mason's murder? I'm glad you have each other.
And we do. We have each other.
You are troubled.
Huh? Me? No, I'm okay.
It was not a question.
Oh. Yeah.
The quiet here, it is different.
Mm-hmm. And the rain.
How do you mean?
No, not you. It's just... It rained every day there. I learned so much. Our conversations, our connections. To be able to share that... in real time, experience it with other people.
So it is not that you are troubled, but that you are changed. Or is it both?
Somehow, I think you know the answer.
Indeed, I do. The things that trouble you run deep.
Yes.
Yes, they do.
God Talks to an Agnostic is written and directed by Don Mays, with music and sound design by Andy Russ, music contributions by The Culmination Group with Edgar Diaz and Ashley Frith, and production management by Natalie Rosario, Melly Hayes, and Allison Marchetti. The show features performances by Don Mays, Rose Weaver, Jackie Davis, Rudy Rue Cabrera, Pamela Lambert, Daraja Hines, Jason Quinn, Jeff Hodge, Tanya Montenegro, Scylla Bento, Mindy Brito, Lorraine Guerra, Leah Pinto, Brian Lang, Susie Santana, Len Cabral, and Gunnar Manchester. God Talks to an Agnostic is produced by the Wilbury Theater Group in collaboration with AFRI Productions, with support from Brown Arts Institute, and presented by the Publix Radio. All episodes of God Talks to an Agnostic were recorded at the Granoff Center for the Arts at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. View the complete list of available episodes on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. To find out more about the show, or to learn more about how you can support our work, visit us online at thewilburygroup.org.
Oh yeah, I had mentioned the story of Gopi's giving me my first swear. Here's my Gopi telling that story.
Saturday mornings were for cleaning. Everybody had chores. Even the little broke twins had to pick up their toys and put them away. Charlie was old enough to run a vacuum. Jojo took out the trash and he walked the dog. Your mama was in the kitchen cooking, and me and your daddy, we'd be repairing, remodeling, rebuilding, redoing something. He was always re-something in things. On this Saturday, it started out like all other Saturdays. Like I said, everyone was doing their chores. And then, there's a knock at the door. And Charlie, I guess because he was so young, he had forgotten the standard black folks protocol. The standard protocol for the early morning knock at the door is to turn off all noise-making appliances, which Charlie did. This was recognized as the signal. The rest of the protocol was to keep quiet, not to make a sound. Don't walk by any windows where the curtains were open, and definitely, definitely don't open the door.
Charlie, don't!
Your mama tried to catch him, but it was too late.
Good morning.
There they were, each with Bibles and a stack of Watchtower magazines, standing in the open doorway. They announce,
"We are Jehovah's Witnesses."
This was a first. Jehovah's Witnesses had never before breached the threshold. Everyone was frozen. Nobody moved. There were four of them. A white couple, probably in their 40s, their kids, 20-something and a teen. Everyone just stood staring at them. It was a long, uncomfortable silence. I called out from the back room, "Who is it?" And just as I stepped into the room, this one says, this two-year-old little snot says,
"Bunch of asshole crackers."
Oh my goodness, what did you?
Your mama almost had a heart attack.
Where did he learn? I'm so sorry.
Your mama scooped you up and handed you off to your daddy, who rushed you out the room.
Sorry, that TV, that damn darn TV.
Charlie was like,
"Charlie, you can't let your brother watch
TV. I was just vacuuming."
She gave him that look, stopped him cold.
"Come in. Please, come in. Yes. Please, come in."
"Are you sure it's not a bother?"
"Oh, of course not. Not at all. You're welcome here. Anytime.
She was horrified. After that bombardment of apologies, that family of Jehovah's Witnesses got the royal treatment. I mean the royal treatment. For the next hour and a half, they got the Dericulous kindness.
One of my Gopi's favorite Gopi-isms, Dericulous instead of ridiculous.
She was all smiles and nods. She made them sandwiches. She gave them cookies and milk and coffee. I thought she was about to invite them to spend the night. They must have left us with a whole year's supply of Watchtower magazines and brochures. I don't know who was happier when they left, them or us.
Neither of us got in trouble,
me and Charlie. But you can bet Charlie learned the protocol after that.
And my Gopi never uttered another swear. I'm lying. I'm lying. Gopi was Gopi. He was going to say what he was going to say, no matter what.